Some call him Apocalypse.
He was some kind of god.
Apocalypse means to destroy this world.
Everything they've built will fall! And from the ashes of their woe, we'll build a better one!
I've never felt power like this before.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Rewind. I'm your host, Travis.
And I'm Xavier.
Oh, okay. what voice is it this week?
For this episode, I'm Xavier.
Professor?
Yeah, Xavier. I'm Professor Xavier. Professor Charles Xavier. Yes.
Okay, well, it's a good thing that you're here, Professor, because on this week's episode, we're actually going to do a review of X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
See, it's a rewind, so just yeah got to throw that in there somewhere.
Yeah, that
right?
Movie happened.
we've gone in depth in past, you know, for the past films of the X-Men franchise. So I figure it's only fitting that we continue our coverage of the newest films in the series. So.
Yeah, and maintain our big superhero summer of superhero coverage.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Yeah, we've had a few of them this year.
Yep. So this film. From the start, I think, just had a different look and feel to it, just from the trailers alone. So, I don't know about you, but I was kind of curious to see how, you know, Bryan Singer and company followed up with their tease at the end of Days of Future Past, you know, with the little end credit scene.
The little blue kid.
Yeah, the little blue kid.
Which I thought looked cool.
Yeah?
A little blue kid building pyramids and shit, and there's four guys on horses.
Right.
It's like, that's actually the best part of that movie.
Yeah.
Damn near. Well, you know, we've talked a lot about Days of Future Past.
Yeah. So, let's... I guess we'll get right into it.
Actually, Bryan Singer made me a bit apprehensive about this movie. I wasn't super psyched that he was coming back again.
Yeah?
Or that he came back at all. I mean, he did the X-Men movies, and then he went off into Superman Returns, which not too many people cared for.
Yeah.
Did you actually watch Jack and the Beanstalk, or Jack the Giant Killer, or whatever? I forget
Jack
what
the Giant Slayer, or whatever it's called.
With Beast...
I think,
as Jack.
Yeah, right, yeah. I think I tried to watch it, and it was
really terrible.
Yeah, it was.
It was really bad. No, everybody looked so bored in it. Like, nobody wanted to be in it.
Maybe that's what I was thinking. Something was off on it.
Ewan McGregor, Stanley Tucci, Ian McShane, really good actors. They were just like, God, kill me.
Yeah. It's probably all green screen.
I had a contract with Fox or something. I have to do this. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. Was it Fox?
I'm assuming. Oh, fuck. I couldn't tell.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But it was a terrible movie. Yeah. And then when I was like, he's coming back to do X-Men, I was like, ugh. So...
Well, that was because he was supposed to come back for First Class, the whole reboot, but then that fell through, and then, I just lost the guy's name that directed.
Vaughn?
Yeah, yeah.
Rick Vaughn?
Yeah.
Pitcher for Cleveland Indians?
Mm-hmm.
No. Yes. yeah, Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah.
Who is a director I really like.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a great director who just, you know, Kingsman and Kick-Ass. He's done some comic book shit. Edgy, good R-rated comic book shit.
And you know, it's funny, after we got home from watching the movie... First Class was actually playing on TV.
Yeah.
And we might get into some comparisons to what we saw on First Class to this movie here.
But it still feels like they're going movie to movie. Like, they don't have that big picture mentality. That
like Marvel.
Yeah, I don't want to keep comparing them to Marvel and stuff, but...
But Marvel's the first thing you see, the big logo, the Marvel logo.
Yeah. But this is... It's still, like, movie to movie to movie and very little consistency. This movie almost tries to create the illusion of... preconceived, like they had thought about this a long time ago. I sort of was describing this, like there's moments we're supposed to be like, oh, so that's why that happened, and as if they had thought about that all along, when really they're like backpedaling and
retroactively. Let's just put this little piece of dialogue in here.
Yeah.
And that'll explain everything, right?
Yeah. That's why Wolverine always has a crush on Jean, because, you know, she's been in his head since she was a little kid.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Oh, by the way, we're going to be spoiling this movie. I know it's fairly new. It's only been out for like a few days. I don't know when this episode will drop, but we saw it. It's opening weekend.
Yeah, yeah. This is the first time we've like seen a movie together in
a while.
Yeah, opening weekend, no less.
Yeah,
because neither one of us really liked to do opening weekend stuff. But.
Yeah, it was really crowded. A lot of screaming kids.
Oh,
it reminded me why I usually tend to wait a week or two.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty bad this time. But anyway, let's. You just said it. We're going to be spoiling this thing like crazy. So if you haven't seen it, you know, pause for a second, go watch it, come back, and then enjoy the episode.
Yeah.
Unless you don't care about spoilers, then continue on.
Yeah.
So where do you want to start on this thing?
Let's jump to the beginning, because it has a really long opening taking place 3,600 years BC.
BCE. I've never seen the BE part. It's usually you just see BC.
Yeah.
And this is a BCE. That threw me off for a second.
I don't know what the E stands for.
Okay, thank you, Doctor.
Well, now we look like idiots. I know AD, what that stands for. Is BC before Christ?
That's what I always took it as.
Yeah. Before Christ in Egypt.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. The E stands for Egypt.
Egypt.
Well, you know what? You know, you said it's a long intro, which it is. It kind of sets up, you know, the whole villain of this movie. But it's ancient Egypt, and they're panning around, and you see all the people. You know, they're kneeling and they're praying, I guess. And we hear them say, "In Sabanur." And that's what we've always heard. That's Apocalypse's name, you know, pretty much. So it's kind of cool to hear him say that.
Yeah, they're saying, "In Sabanur, yeah. In Sabanur." Yeah. Yeah, and they're carrying him, and what do you call those things where they're like, it's like a platform on poles, they're carrying him.
Yeah,
like,
portable throne, pretty much.
Yeah, sort of like that thing.
I'm sure there's a name for it.
Yeah, like what Marlon Brando is on in Island of Dr. Moreau, he's on one of those things, and we see Apocalypse, and, you know, it's been talk for months, he looks stupid, mm-hmm. You know, well, they're probably going to change it, oh, they're going to tweet. What do you think of the final result of the visual look of Apocalypse? Not that this is exactly what it looks like for the rest of the film, we should say.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about just the first time we see him?
Like, well, I mean, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm asking you, what did you think of the look of Apocalypse?
It wasn't terrible, but for live action, for Apocalypse, I mean, there's a few things that, you know, we talk about cosplay, you know, mm-hmm. You always need that. The thing,
yeah,
you know, I think he had a couple of the things that makes him up. Like he had the on the mouth, he
the
had
the lines on his mouth.
He had
yeah,
the mouth. There were some piping tubing coming down from the back.
And yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought he looked a little
skin,
silly.
The skin color was more or less grayish.
He didn't have a big A on his belt that I noticed.
Right?
Did he? That would have been awesome.
Right. That's the thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But now Apocalypse is immortal in the books, but in this one, it's like he has to jump from body to body to maintain his immortality. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what he's doing. He's about to transfer into a human naked Oscar Isaac.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, I was calling bullshit. Like, he was always blue. He was never human looking. And I guess they explained. But he never had to transfer his body either in the books.
That we know of. Yeah.
Yeah. And as in the middle of their transferring it, a bunch of the citizens, apparently they don't like being under his rule. They're like, he's a false god.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they basically entomb him in the middle of this... of his soul transferred.
Right, right.
For thousands of years.
And the, well, another thing besides Apocalypse, he has his horsemen with him too, and they try to protect him. And...
Now, I ask you this, were those supposed to be mutants who he gave powers, or boosted powers, or were they just regular people?
That is a good point. I would assume mutants.
But the whole thing about Apocalypse is he was this weird anomaly that 5,000 years ago a mutant came up. I mean, there's, I guess Selene technically predates him, the Black Queen, because she's like even older than him. From the Hellfire Club, the Black Queen.
Is she?
I think she's supposed to be like even older than he is.
Oh. Hmm. Okay.
So she's like a psychic vampire. She drains like life force energy. It keeps you young. So she's like ridiculously old.
Oh, okay. Well, my only thing with that, to your point actually, is before he lay down and they were going to do the transference, someone like cut Oscar Isaac and it healed up really fast. So he's a mutant too.
Like, was he?
Well, he healed up.
He's like Wolverine. He was like Wolverine. He had that shit 5,000 years ago.
Healing factor.
Yeah. I guess. They're just making it seem like mutants were just running around all over the place.
Willy-nilly.
I think Selene is 17,000 years old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she predates Apocalypse by a good long while.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, then it jumps to the modern times. I kind of forget how the movie starts, but... Does it start in the club?
Well,
it's like Mutant Fight Club.
I think it starts with Cyclops' introduction.
Well, he's just in class.
Yeah, I think so. Pretty sure. But one thing I did want to mention before that, the transition from the intro to the movie is they continued the X-Men, where it's like.
Yeah, the Cerebro door.
Yeah, but the way it started
with that same piece of score.
So give them credit where credit's due. I mean, at least they have some kind of...
I mean, I guess if you dug that, it's cool.
Well, they were showing, like, the time, I think. It started off in Egypt.
Yeah, you see, like, the Industrial Revolution, yeah. And you see Renaissance, and you see shit like that. You see a Nazi logo come and go and stuff like that, so.
They had some balls, they would have done a Hydra instead.
But no, they can't do that.
I don't know.
Well, I think Nazis are more relevant to this with Magneto.
Yeah, true.
As opposed to, yeah. I thought, I was like, wow, you threw it a Nazi symbol, but I was like, oh, Magneto, of course. Yeah. He's got a connection there. I don't want to get too bogged down on what scene happens first and next, because we only saw this once in the theater yesterday.
Yeah.
Spoiler. We might jump around a little bit. Yeah.
But one of the first scenes is we see it's in 1983, I think.
That's when it takes place.
And then it's in a classroom. Because
they're Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
It's the introduction to Scott Summers, Cyclops, the manifestation of his powers in the classroom.
Which we saw in Wolverine Origins. He was in the classroom. My eyes are hurting. Can I go? It's the same scene, dude.
Pretty much, yeah. Except now he's got a bully after him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he had a bully in Origins. It was Sabretooth. Kind of. But again, it's like, do we know Scott Summers? We know he's going to shoot some lasers any second now. Mm-hmm. We know.
So that was his intro. And then I think we go to a club scene after that. It's in Germany. Is it Germany?
I think so.
Yeah. And then because it says Germany, I was thinking, oh, we're going to see Nightcrawler. But that's not who we see first. It's in a fight club type scene, and we see...
It's a cage match.
Yeah.
And it's Angel fighting maybe Blob, just a really fat guy.
Oh, I took that as Blob.
I called him Blob in my head.
Well, because he had the dark outfit with the yellow belt, and he's really fucking fat.
Yeah. So Angel is like a... I don't know what nationality this kid was supposed to be.
I don't know.
But he was clearly not... I mean, was he Warren Worthington? I guess... You know,
do you want to skip? Well, okay. The thing was, it's a guy. It's a blonde haired kid with angel wings.
Yeah, a British actor actually. So
okay, well,
I'm not saying a British guy can't play an American.
But they never called him by his name.
They just called him Angel.
Yeah.
Well, they never called Psylocke Betsy either. But I mean, it's Psylocke.
Yeah.
I mean, how many? It's not like there's not a lot of other mutants in this saga who were named Angel, except for that one who was in First Class. Yeah, she was named Angel.
And Warren Worthington in The Last Stand, which takes place years from now, and he's probably younger then than he is now, so...
But, okay, yeah, this is what...
This is where timeline gets...
Yeah, this is where the timeline's still screwy, and they made a whole movie to fix it. Yeah, right. And they still couldn't get all the timeline right. But basically, he defeats Blob, so they throw in this little kid, and it's a young Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
And Jennifer Lawrence is... I'm not calling her Mystique. Jennifer Lawrence is in the club watching this, and she basically rescues... I guess she rescues Nightcrawler. Now, what is she doing there, and why? Is she doing it because she knows that's her kid?
We don't know.
I was hoping that they would drop that. And that's why she sought him out, to protect him and take care of him. Otherwise, what? She just randomly goes across the countryside looking for mutants who need their help?
And that was the only one that she's found, right?
They didn't make it seem like this is what she's been up to.
Yeah.
Like, still fighting the good fight, eh, Raven? And no line like that to imply this is, like, what she does with her life now. Yeah. It's just...
This is coming off the heels of Days of Future Past, where apparently she's seen as a hero to all these mutants from what happened at the end of the last movie.
Okay, thank you. I hated this. The way they built her up, and, everybody's got, like, posters of her in their wall. She's like this hero. She's like Che Guevara, They're like, because when we saw you... Now, what is the reason they all hold her up so high? Because when they filmed her in Paris, that scene where she's trying to kill Tyrion, and she falls out the window?
Yeah.
Everybody got pictures of her?
Right.
What was so heroic about that? What did she do that day that made everybody like, oh my god, she's such an amazing hero? She was limping away. She was shot in the leg. She looked pretty pathetic.
Maybe because just the realization that she's a blue chick running around.
Characters are, they keep... They look up to you. All the ex-students, when they see her turn blue, they're like, oh, and they all look up to her, and Storm's like, I want to be just like her. Like, she's this big folk hero.
Yeah.
Like the hero of Canton, the man they call Mystique or whatever. And I didn't get, didn't she also try to assassinate the president like a week later too that year?
Right.
Nobody talks about that. it was just so obviously trying to build up Jennifer Lawrence as a hero, as a folk hero. Just really crammed.
If it wasn't obvious enough from the past, really the last movie, that it's a Jennifer Lawrence franchise.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, I think, try to cement it. That
yeah, Like, I kept reading a year or two ago that Jennifer Lawrence was done with this franchise and she wanted out.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, they, you know, had it been Marvel, they would have built her up last movie and set her up to become this hero. But I think they thought she wanted out. She was done with this franchise. And then, I don't know, Hunger Games ended and she's like, shit, I don't have a franchise anymore. Okay, I'll come back. Yeah. Like, oh, crap. We didn't build you up in time.
And about, like, maybe a month or two before this movie came out, you know, they're doing, you know, press junkets and stuff like that. And Jennifer Lawrence is now, she wants to keep doing X-Men movies now. That's what she was saying. So
they probably pay well and, you know.
Steady paycheck.
Yeah. So I didn't like this whole Mystique. First off, Mystique is not a hero. She never has been.
Right.
And the movies didn't really build her up as a hero. They just kind of force you to accept this is the world we're living in now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I wasn't a super duper fan of how they handled any of that.
Yeah.
And what happened to Mutant and Proud? She's like blue for like 2 minutes in the whole movie.
Just about. Yeah. You're trying to joke, but I think she is.
She's barely blue at all.
Yeah.
Hardly.
And you know what? I'll say it now. This makeup effects for her blue Mystique character, it's terrible.
It's funny. We were talking about First Class. It came on TV when we came home. It looks way different in First Class.
Yeah.
She looks almost unrecognizable. There's so much makeup on her. This one, it's a blue skin with like one or two dots on her forehead. They almost look like cute freckles or something.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence is way more recognizable. And I get that. It's just the lack of consistency still bugs me.
Yeah. And it's just, it looks like little dark stickers and they stick them on her forehead.
Yeah.
It looks bad.
But she basically rescues Nightcrawler and takes him to this underground mutant, Caliban.
Yeah.
He says, I'm Caliban. And then, oh no, before this happens, we catch up with Magneto.
Yes, we find out what's happening to him. Because that's another, his whole character in this movie is reflected of what happened in the last movie, too. He's basically in hiding, pretty much. New identity and everything.
Yeah, now, but it does. It's not so much just that he's in hiding. He's consciously decided to stop being a terrorist or a radical.
Right.
He really has settled down to join a family. Now, I don't know why. I mean, what convinced him to do that in that last movie? Why would he decide to do that? Yet last movie, he was ready to kill the president on national TV and usher in a brand new thing. And then you shoot him, he walks away, and you know what? Forget that.
He moved to baseball stadium.
Yeah. There was no reason for between these two movies for his character to become that way. So, again, there's no consistency. But, yeah, he's got a wife, kid, working at, like, a refinery or something like that. Typical blue-collar job. And
as soon as you saw him come home and there's wife and kid,
you
knew this wasn't going to end well, right? Mm-hmm.
Again, everybody knows that's kind of what set him off in the books, is his wife and family were killed.
Yeah, and her name was Magna. I mean, they got that right, at least, you know.
I forget what his daughter, what his kid's name were in the original book, but it might have been Nina. That's a little girl's name.
Yeah, it wasn't Nina, but yeah. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, there's an incident in his work. We
cut to Egypt, where Moira MacTaggert, who we haven't seen since First Class,
right?
Special agent of the CIA, American CIA, Moira MacTaggert, not Scottish geneticist, but whatever.
Even though she's got the most ethnic name,
MacTaggert. But yeah, she finds some underground bunker, and she finds a bunch of dudes like worshiping at the busted up temple of
Insabanur.
And she basically brings forth the apocalypse by not shutting the door.
Yeah.
You know, you're letting flies in. The sun shines in on the tip. Turns out all you needed in 5,000 years was to shine some light on that.
Mm-hmm.
Why did those guys close the door every time they went down to worship?
Surely they knew that.
Why didn't they just... I don't think they did know that. And don't call me Shirley.
Because
there was no special trick that did it. It was literally just the light shone on it.
Right.
It got some. It's a solar-powered thing. And it activates Apocalypse, wakes them up.
Right.
And that sends this shockwave across the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And Magneto's in his refinery and some molten metal thing. He stops it from killing a guy, but people see him use his powers. And then they go, like, all lynch mob on him. They show up at his house with bows and arrows and ropes. No metal on them and shit.
Right. You're not wearing your badges.
Yeah.
Metal.
No metal. And he agrees to go with them, just, you know, leave his family alone. And his daughter's mutant power manifests. And that's when that dude is holding a bow and arrow like an idiot. Like, why has he got it aimed at his daughter? Why not aim it at Magneto? I don't know. Why are you aiming at the... But he lets loose, and the mother's holding the daughter, and then, like, the mother... Like, kind of like Laurie and the baby on Walking Dead comic. Both of them get killed at once. The arrow goes through both of them. And, yeah, that's when Eric loses his shit.
it was so funny, like, seeing this in the theater. Like, because when he lets go of the arrow, it was like the music stopped and it went slow-mo and the arrow went and, like, the whole audience, like, gasped.
Yeah.
Like, before anything happened. I was like, really? Come on.
And then, you know, he grabs the locket that his daughter's wearing. He, in a really cool scene, he uses it to kind of kill all the men really fast. But then he's... I don't know if I'm in the minority here or what, but he grabs a lock and he yells at this guy, like, is this what I am? Is this what you... I kind of giggled a little bit. Michael Fassbender's a great actor, but it seemed a little over the top. He was kind of hamming it up, I thought. It's just... Maybe I'm just a cold bastard. His wife and children are dying, he's yelling, and I'm just like... I don't know. I felt bad, but yeah. I
didn't buy that scene. You're a sick bastard.
I didn't buy the acting in that scene.
Well, to your point, I think that's the most emotion we've seen out of Magneto's character out of all these movies.
Yeah, he doesn't. No,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't do that. But he's never had a wife and kid.
It would have been better if he just kind of, like, you know, was crying and calmly was like, and then he kind of lowers his head and then he just, like, loses the emotion, let it drain from his face. Yeah. And it's like whatever humanity he had, it's gone. And he was just like, okay, I guess I'm going to kill you now. And he didn't care one which way about it. And I thought that would have been more powerful.
Does he, like, after this whole thing with his family and everything, does he even say anything?
About them dying?
No, anything. Like, at all. Does Michael, like, to me, like, halfway through this movie, I was like, man, like, Michael Fassbender has, like a small role in this movie. Like, he's a horseman.
He doesn't have a lot to do.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He spends a whole climax just standing still, literally, just standing still.
Yeah, and he's looking around, like, when people are trying to talk to him, he's just looking at him. He's not saying anything.
Yeah.
I don't think he says anything.
And all the action he does at the end is just his arms are outstretched, and then when it's time to do action, he angles them forward. And it's all CG. You know, the actor didn't do anything, really. It was kind of lame.
And that's the reason I brought that up was because we were going back to First Class. Man, we were watching these scenes with him... In that movie in First Class, like him and James McAvoy, man, they're like knocking it out of that park in that movie.
All of his like badass scenes, like where he throws a knife at the guy, gut, and he pulls the knife back, and all those cool little tricks that he was doing, and the guy's trying to reach with his watch, and he grabs the watch and uses it to slap the guy. He was not having fun with his powers, but it was visually cool on screen to see this.
Yeah,
you know, movies are a visual medium; make it look neat, entertain me. But yeah, Magneto loses his shit, and then we cut back to Egypt. Where Apocalypse is now awake.
Yeah.
And he's walking through the streets and basically just a potato sack over his head. Like nobody notices this giant blue guy. I mean, it's not like it's really covering much of him. And it's a crowded market square. And nobody knows. It's basically like a Ninja Turtle wearing the fedora and trench coat. Nobody can tell that it's this giant blue monster.
Oh, come on. There's other stuff to nitpick about. I don't think that's one of the things we got to nitpick. He was pretty much covered up. I mean... He's big. He's a big dude, but I mean...
Well, viewers, go watch the scene and tell me if you can obviously tell it was a big blue guy.
Anyway, he sees another... he sees this girl, and she's trying to steal some stuff. And she uses her powers, knocks some stuff over, and starts running. Mm-hmm. We find out it's, Storm, pretty much.
Yeah.
So we get the introduction of a young Storm. And she gets cornered in an alleyway, and he goes back there and... He basically takes out all the people that's about to...
How does he do that?
Okay. I know he sends, like, one dude, like, into the wall, right?
Yeah. Like, the wall absorbs the guy.
Yeah.
And the other guys, doesn't he just disintegrate him into, like, sand or some shit?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, answer me this. What were Apocalypse's powers in this movie?
Well, I think they addressed that later on. About every time he does this transference thing, he gains the powers of, whoever he's, taking over the body of, whatever. Mm-hmm. So he's got all these different powers, but it's never really defined to the point.
Yeah, he just seems to do whatever's convenient, whatever the scene calls for, he can do it.
He's literally like godlike.
Yeah. And that was a little, I don't know... It just, I kept, every time he did something new, it was too convenient to just have a guy who could do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Apocalypse Ex Machina. He just do whatever he needed at that exact moment. But yeah, she takes him home. Oh, we also forgot, apparently 5,000 years ago, he must have transferred into a mutant who had the mutant ability to just absorb knowledge through a TV screen. by touching it.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
Yeah, he touches the TV, and then all of a sudden can speak English. He knows all about technology. He knows it's 1983. He knows everything that's been going on, the hit shows on TV at the time. He knows how MASH ended. And all of a sudden, he just, like, knows everything about modern times because he touched the TV.
I swear. I don't know if you heard it, but in the theater, like, there was, like, close-up of his face, and he's, like, his eyes are rolling back and everything. I could have swore I heard smatterings of laughing.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. He conveniently has the power to just know everything of the past 500 years because he touches the TV.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. His powers are stupid and ridiculously convenient. And it's insulting. And then, yeah, and he has Storm in his apartment. Storm takes him back to her apartment, and that's when we see she has a poster of Mystique on her wall because that's her hero. I want to grow up to be just like her and shit like that. And,
yeah.
And he decides to make her... Now he knows what's been going on in the past 5,000 years. He knows that there's superpowers now, and man have...
Superpowers.
Yeah, mankind, humankind, I guess. Yeah. The weak have taken over the earth. The meek inherited the earth after all, and he's like, this will not do.
Mm-hmm.
So he decides to get back in business, and he's putting the band back together, and she's the first of his horsemen, so he... gives Storm more power. He, like, touches her, and you see, like, her hair, kind of like Rogue, her hair starts turning white. And she has the mohawk, so we get white mohawk Storm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was, I guess it's a way of saying how, you know, there's Storm, that's how she got her white hair.
It's like, oh, that's why her hair was white. Like, because it never explained why Halle Berry, a black woman, had white hair.
Yeah.
It was just, okay. And we're supposed to be like, oh, that's why her hair has been white for the last 16 years in movies. When that had nothing to do with it, she was for some reason in the comics. I don't know if there was an explanation. She was always just a white haired kid.
I never questioned.
And that's Storm. She's a mutant.
Yeah, I never questioned.
Like, why does Gambit have black eyes? Because he's a mutant.
Right. Yeah.
It's just part of his mutation. It's a very groovy mutation.
First Class was, I think, it's an underrated movie. First Class.
Yeah, McAvoy and Fassbender like, pretty much saved that movie. But yeah, McAvoy was charming as hell in the beginning of it. So he goes to Caliban. I don't know. I guess he knows that Caliban can detect
Storm. I assume that Storm told him.
Yeah. But I mean, if Storm's a little street rat living in Egypt, how does she even know about Caliban? Where was he located? I always assume Caliban was more in Eastern Europe where Nightcrawler was rescued. I don't know if they did or not. They might have. If only they gave us big letters on the screen of, like, boom, Africa, or boom, London, you know, like Marvel did.
Yeah.
But he shows up to Calibac, and Psylocke is there. Yeah. Olivia Munn is Psylocke, one of his lieutenants or something, and she pulls a sword on Storm and pulls the thing you wanted to see. You asked it, because you asked for it. Shoom! Like, she pulls out her psychic javelin out of her hand. It's, like, 8 feet long. What'd you think of Psylocke and how they portrayed her and her powers, I guess I should say?
Well, they got it right as far as what you're going to do with her. But, I mean, yeah, the whole, that thing that came out, that was like Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool from X-Men Origins Wolverine, that thing. That's how long that thing was.
No, it was like from here to the wall. It was 8 feet long.
It was pretty long, yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this. How do you think they handled her telepathy?
I don't think they address
that. I don't even think they address the fact that apparently he's like, I want only the strongest mutants. So he gets the one who basically just has like a mental.
He wants the best ones.
Psychic knife.
He wants the best ones or whichever the first four he sees.
Basically. Yeah, like Storm, okay. She can control the weather. She's a powerful mutant, mega class or something. And then if Psylocke had telepathy, maybe I could see like, okay, I need a telepath. You'll come in handy. But all she had was psychic sword and psychic whip. Because that's the thing in this movie now.
Yeah, I guess we'll get to that here.
So she has psychic whips just coming out of her hands. It's like, the look, like you said, they got it really right. And you're like, oh my god, they're really doing... They're going to do Psylocke right. And then you go see it, and they just fucked her up. Olivia Munn looked great.
I'm not going to lie. When we first see her as, like, Psylocke in the outfit, I was distracted. I kept staring at her. I didn't know what the hell else was going on. Because I was a fanboy for Psylocke. Teenage boy, come on now.
So, yeah, like that was. Where we all?
She was designed for that. She's not bad.
In the 90s, in the early 90s, when I was, that's when I was really getting into comics. Around like 1990, with Jim Lee and all that.
Jim Lee, the master.
Yeah, the way he would draw her in the 90s and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, big Psylocke fan.
And then see that in live action. Olivia Munn's. I mean, she's Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's nice to look at.
Yeah.
So it was a nice package.
So she decides to work with Apocalypse, and they're like, I'll help you find even more powerful mutants. So they go to Angel. Again, that's his only power, is that he can fly.
And he's busted up.
And he can't even do it without wings. Like, there's mutants who can just straight up fly and shoot lightning and do a million other cool things.
And remember, when they found him, he was all busted up. His wings mm-hmm. was all...
And that's when they decide, like, oh, I didn't know his wings were busted. Forget this guy. I'll go find you some better mutants. And yeah. Apocalypse is like, no, I like this guy. And he proceeds to just turn his busted wings. He takes his broken wings. And Angel learns to fly again. He learns to live so free. No, they just turn metal. Because that's his power, too.
Right.
To just touch wings and make them metal. That's right. Another. Thank God he met that mutant who had that power 5,000 years ago to do that. Now, in the comics, how exactly does he get his wings? I know Sinister gives them to them, but does he, like, transplant them? Is it a whole operation, or does he just grow metal wings out of his body?
It was during the Fall of the Mutant storyline in the comic series storyline. And, yeah, Angel gets attacked by the Morlocks. Or, no, I'm sorry, the Marauders. Sinister's Marauders. They get, basically, his wings get amputated. And then Apocalypse comes down and... creates Archangel out of that, but I don't know where the wings come from. Like, if, like you said, if they just pop out of his back or what.
Well, regardless, he dies. Three down.
Yeah.
He's got three guys, and then we cut to Magneto goes to his family's dead. He's angry. He shows up to the refinery. He's, you know, busting it. He's opening the door with his power. He's not even afraid to use his powers, and he's like, oh, you know, you guys saw me do some things, and they came after us, and now he's going to kill every single guy in there. And then, oh yeah, and Apocalypse can teleport. He can just kind of like blink.
Yeah.
He just kind of create windows, walk through them, and zoom.
A lot of this, I felt, was leftover special effects from Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
Like the,
or Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
where Shang Tsung is pulling Sonya, that door that opens, it was purple, and then he walks through and zoom. It reminded me of Mortal Kombat from 1995.
Fair enough.
But yeah, and then, you know, Magneto's about to kill them, Apocalypse and his babes show up, and then he turns his back and goes, who the fuck are you? We get the one F-bomb from Magneto.
Yeah. Did you like it? I don't know. To me, it was like, really? Like, it didn't seem necessary.
It felt like we got this F-bomb, we gotta use it. You know, you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah. And the one that normally uses that, we can't use it right now, so.
He doesn't talk, sir.
Mm.
So. Well, they could have given it to Xavier again. Fuck off. He said it in Days of Future Past, Wolverine.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, they could have given it to Xavier again. I've never felt fucking power like this before. That would have been cool.
No, just, every time they do that, it just seems forced. Like,
yeah,
you don't need it.
Well, I thought Hugh Jackman saying "go fuck yourself"
that makes sense.
Yeah, I liked how they used it there.
Yeah.
So he decides to recall. Well, the other three guys kind of just go with him. Like, oh, cool, you're giving me powers. I'm with you, but. Eric takes a bit convincing, and Apocalypse, maybe he can sense this is the most powerful. He actually, like, explains why you need to work with me. He takes him to Auschwitz, to where the very first X-Men movie opened back in 2000, that little death camp where all the Jews would be marched, and his powers manifested. He pulled the gate. I don't know why that place is still standing.
Yeah.
Even the gate's all still bent and stuff. But he tells him, like, put your hand on the ground and feel, like, the magnets, the waves of electromagnetic current running through the earth and all that, the polarities, and turns out you can control the whole planet. And then he starts tearing Auschwitz, just wiping it away. And that's that shot in the trailer where the camera's really low and we see Apocalypse, like, you know, from the ruins of the earth, we will build a new one. And you see Auschwitz's debris flying everywhere. So the whole set's complete. He's got the four horsemen now.
Yeah.
Oh, and he can give you awesome clothes. He can just touch you, and you get really cool clothes. There was a mutant who had that power.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep beating that joke to death, but I really want to say he can just do anything in this movie. He can give you cool clothes. Just, here's a helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw you wearing it on TV when I had my TV absorbing power.
You just mentioned a second ago about, you know, the one shot we saw in the trailers where he's, you know, doing his big speech or whatever. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the visuals of this movie? Because this is a totally, like, I almost didn't think this was a Bryan Singer film just because it was so different from what he's... If you go look at X-Men and X-Men, or X2, and then you see this...
Well, I mean, X-Men and X2 is a different world now.
Yeah.
It's got, you know, comic book movies are now a genre unto themselves, and you got to go big. especially in a summer with, you know, Civil War and Superman and Batman. Yeah, you need, you know, the world. I'm shaking the world up and I'm destroying cities. And, you know, you got to go big now. Yeah. Plus, this is like part three, in a way, of the reboot.
Of the reboot.
If you count, well, I guess if you count X-Men First Class as a, well.
The third one is First Class, Days of Future Past. And
yeah. But First Class was like a whole new, well, okay, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. All right, so where are we at now? We got the reintroduction of Quicksilver, because we find out he's back, or he's back at his mom's basement, and apparently now he knows that Magneto is
his dad.
Yeah,
yeah. At some point, his mom must have told him, or he figured it out, I think.
Yeah,
from the last movie. But he doesn't do much in that scene.
Yeah. Then we see the return of Havoc. Alex Summers, he's bringing Cyclops to.
Yeah, apparently they're brothers. I don't know where. I mean, the whole time he's like, Alex Summers, the only kid who prefers solitary confinement. If he had a family and shit to go to, why is he in jail or whatever? But okay. And so Havoc has a little brother named Scott.
Right.
Not an older brother like in the books, but okay, again. I always hate it when I do that, but I can't help it. I can't help myself.
You do it so well, though.
Yeah.
So
he takes him to Xavier's school.
Yeah.
And he's walking. Scott has a. He has bandages on his eyes because he can't open his eyes. He's blindfolded, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And he's walking through all the students are hustling and bustling, going to class, and he bumps into a little redhead girl.
Yeah.
Knocks her books over, but she like, it's Jean.
Yeah.
I'm not going to walk you through the scene. Like, ooh, it turns out it's Jean. Yeah, we know.
Yeah.
She's like, walk much, dick. He's like, I can't see, bit. No.
Fuck off.
Did you, obviously this leads to this whole, we know Scott and Jean are going to become a thing. So there's a little, like, not sexual tension, they're kids, but I mean, you know, there's flirtations and stuff like that. Well, did you see any chemistry between these two actors? Oh, by the way, Sansa Stark of Game of Thrones, we've talked about, is the new Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Sophie Turner.
Yeah. As far as the chemistry goes, not a whole lot, but they're just kind of, you know, planting the seeds more or less of
I guess.
I don't know. What did you think of her, Sophie Turner, playing Jean Grey?
I wish you could say she sucked, because I just don't like Sophie Turner or Sansa. I don't think she was great, but I don't think she particularly brought the movie down at all. She was fine.
The first few scenes that she was in, all I could see was
Sansa?
Yeah, that's all I can see.
Yeah, it doesn't help that this movie drops in the middle of while Game of Thrones is on, while we all got Sansa on the brain.
And she's on the move on that show, on this particular season, too. So, but
spoiler alert.
I don't know. By the end of the movie, I didn't mind it. Like, she didn't have an accent, which was
good. Did you think she did get an American accent?
Good enough.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She was fine. She didn't bring the movie down. I'm not going to say, oh my God, she was a revelation. Nobody was really great performance-wise in this movie. Like I said, not even Fassbender and McAvoy, who were usually great. And Jennifer Lawrence, she seems so bored.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her biggest role is Katniss. And in the book, Katniss is described as being kind of a cold fish, not a lot of enthusiasm, kind of a boring person.
Mm-hmm.
So, to her credit, that's how she plays her. That's why she needs PETA to make her seem likable and all that kind of stuff. So Katniss is kind of a boring character, and she portrays it boring.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's portraying Mystique the same way. She kind of portrayed it like Katniss.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she's getting confused.
Yeah. I just found her very boring. And, I don't know. And she didn't use her powers a whole lot. Like I said, she wasn't blue. It was just Jennifer Lawrence being
Katniss. We're talking about her. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm still talking to J-Law.
Sophie Turner. So, so you liked her, but she wasn't great.
I didn't hate her. Which is, I guess, a glowing recommendation for her for me.
I'll take it. All right, so
Professor Xavier agrees to take in Scott. He shows him his power, basically. There's that scene across the lake that you liked.
Well, I don't know. This is kind of humorous.
You said you liked it.
Well, James McAvoy more in particular, but they got to test out, see what Cyclops can do. So he says, open your eyes. It'll be all right. And in the midst of him saying that, he opens his eyes and, you know, Damer takes off because Professor Xavier's like right there.
Yeah, like cuts the tree in half.
Yeah, and like goes all through the water. Yeah,
and, yeah.
that was my great grandfather's tree. I used to swing from that tree when I was a kid.
Like, and it falls apart. I'd have been pissed. But well, that's me. So yeah, and then at some point, J-Law. Oh, when she brought, I think we skipped a scene where she brings Nightcrawler to Caliban. Caliban tells her, like, oh, your old friend Eric was just on the news. He killed, like, a bunch of cops and blah, blah, blah. So,
oh, that's right.
She was about to put Nightcrawler on, like, a train and just send him off. But then she decides, she's like, how fast can you teleport? So she uses him to get to the mansion, and then she decides to drop off Nightcrawler.
Oh, that's right. That was the reason why he was there with her. Mm-hmm. It was just basically the teleportation device. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then what did you think of the Nightcrawler?
I didn't mind him.
It was fine, yeah. If you liked what Alan Cumming did in the last one, it's kind of the same thing. He looks the same. He looks just like a younger version.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. That's all you can really ask for if you're in a prequel type setting.
It was like amazing. They almost maintained some consistency in the character. Right? Yeah. But yeah, she drops him off at the school, and then Hank is like, Raven, what are you doing here? And then I guess they don't treat her like a bad guy or an enemy.
Yeah, they don't trust her, I don't think, but... Mm. Actually, I didn't even get that. I got no sense of they hate her or they still love her or whatever. It was just like...
Well, with Beast, there's still some sexual tension because they kind of had that flirtation in First Class. And it was addressed in the road cut of Days of Future Past. They actually make out a lot.
Yeah.
And they have like a steamy sex scene where they both blew out while they're making... Like they're both in human form and they're making out and she turns blue and he gets all hot and he beasts out while they're making out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and in this movie, there's still a little bit of, like, you know, yeah, we had a thing once and everything. And mm-hmm. And then she tells Professor X, like, we got to find Eric. He's gone bad again. He's in trouble, yada, yada. And that's when they all... Oh, in the meantime, Xavier has gone with Havoc to go visit Moira MacTaggert at the CIA.
Right.
Who has no memory of him at all.
Because at the end of First Class, he, you know, mind-wiped mm-hmm.
pretty he much. Had the MIB thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he walks, and this is kind of funny because he's a little flustered meeting her.
Yeah,
and you know he's smitten.
This is where we get Charming McAvoy again.
Yeah, he walks in her office and he's like, you know, he sees family photos. He's like, you have a son. He's like, yeah, yes, I do. Does he have a husband? I mean, do you have a husband? Like, it's a cute little scene. And from her point of view, she doesn't even know this guy, but he's totally like,
yeah,
we kissed one time, and it was awesome. But yeah, they take now. She goes on. She gets the Apocalypse file. She goes to the Apocalypse cabinet under A and tells them everything they know about Apocalypse. And her role should have pretty much ended right here. She serves no purpose the rest of the movie. She's just there.
Yeah.
Why did they bring her back? Why did they take her on missions? What? She just serves no purpose other than to be there. She was really useless.
Oh, I know why. Because later on in the movie, he makes her remember everything.
But, I mean...
That's it. That's the only thing.
Yeah, so we have to put up with her for an hour of the will they, won't they before he gives her memory back. And it's like, oh, and then what happened? They don't kiss. They don't connect again. She's just like, oh, I remember now. And that's all. They don't even, like... There's no conclusion because to that plot.
Because now she's got a son and a husband and, oh, this is awkward now.
Yeah. But you have a mansion. You seem pretty well off. Oh, but you don't have any hair. But, again, we're jumping ahead.
Yeah.
So they all go into Cerebro. Everybody gets to go ride the Cerebro ride today. And that's when he connects to Magneto's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, hello, old friend. And
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Apocalypse is in the corner giving them all their fancy new duds while Magneto's over there and he's having a little mental conversation. He's like, you know, don't do this. There's good in you. I felt it. The Emperor hasn't driven it from you fully. But, you know, Magneto's really mourning his parents. And that's when you see Apocalypse almost like mentally hear him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sort of hijacks that connection.
Yeah.
And he hijacks Xavier. And that's when we get the scene of his eyes. Like, I never felt power. And then he uses Xavier to transmit to the whole world.
A message. Yeah.
A message that I'm going to destroy you and, you know, all that shit. And then, so they have to, like, smash Cerebro. They got to, you know, cut the power, cut the phone line. And that's when Havoc just busts. That's that cool shot of him in Cerebro just letting loose, which is a cool visual.
Yeah.
So has he learned since then to control it, or was he wearing that thing under his shirt?
I think it's been addressed before that he's been able to control it.
When?
I think.
He wasn't in Days of Future Past at all. No, he was in the beginning.
Yeah.
No, but didn't he like shot one of them little disky things, didn't he?
I can't remember.
I thought he did.
Oh, well. Well, it's still a cool visual, though.
Point is, it's cool to see him shoot that thing.
Yeah.
And that's when Apocalypse and all of his buddies show up at the school And then they kidnap Xavier, leave, and Havoc, just like a loose cannon, tries to shoot at them. Instead, he shoots the new X-Jet, which I guess has like some nuclear-powered engine, because it proceeds to basically blow up the entire school in an explosion. And then we get the character of Quicksilver who shows up.
Yeah.
What'd you like about this? Or tell me about this scene, how you felt.
Okay, so like you said,
because I feel this is the one everybody's gonna be talking about.
Yeah, this is kind of very similar to Days of Future Past.
Yeah,
but they found that everybody, for the most part, general audiences, they like that scene.
Yeah,
is the most
talked
about.
Entertaining scene.
It's entertaining. Then you start thinking about it, it gets kind of
I don't know. I gotta want, again. It sounds like you're just a pooping on everything. You're just a big party pooper, but and it looks cool. It's just it again. It's if a guy could do that, he'd be unstoppable. You wouldn't even need the X-Men. It almost seems as if his mutant power is not that he can move really fast; it's that he can slow down time.
Yeah, it's very kind of. It's not. He had to be like faster than fast, like faster than speed of sound, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. He did, because that scene goes on. Because in the first movie, it's like 30 seconds or
he's
something.
He's just running around. He does a couple
things.
This is
a long scene. It's like 2-3 minutes.
It's the full Sweet Dream song.
That's what it was. Yeah, you see, everything's exploding and it pauses, and you just like, dun, 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 and you see these sneakers, these silver sneakers walk up, and you're like, oh, everybody knows we're in for a. And he proceeds to run into the school and one by one by one pull every single student out, every dog, even the goldfish. He manages to play some darts. He drinks a tab. He just, he goofs off a lot.
Yeah.
Too.
And I think we were talking about this before, too. It would be so much better and make him look more heroic if you just, like, saved everybody. Not, like...
Move like you have a purpose. Make haste. I mean, I know you're super fast, but... Because he managed to save everybody except Havoc. Apparently Havoc died.
They never addressed that later on.
Well, they said he died.
Did they?
Yeah.
We never saw the body.
Well, we never saw... Well, the whole fucking school exploded.
It was all body.
They said he was closest to the explosion.
That's all he said. He was closest to the explosion. I didn't see a body. He ain't dead. But they didn't explain it. So, I don't know. He's never seen again.
Well, I mean, like I said, it was big enough to... It was underground. It was big enough to... I'm sure the ground collapsed on it, you know.
You've read comics before, right?
Yeah, well, the thing is, Havoc sucks. I hated the actor who played Havoc in First Class. You know, was named Lucas Till.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting till this kid becomes a decent actor. I think he's boring. And I was glad when Havoc died. That was the best part of the movie. I was like, oh, thank God. I thought he was going to be part of this. I think he got a name for you. Beast. He's just so wooden. His delivery was very wooden. I've never liked Havoc. God, I'm sounding so hateful.
There's one thing about this. Before,
sure, he's a nice guy.
Before all this happened, we see Cyclops, Jean, Nightcrawler, and Jubilee. They're not there.
They went mall hopping.
From what we saw in screenshots and different things, but not in this movie. All we saw them is walking out of a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, they're watching Jedi. And yeah, they're breaking it down the
we
way
got the
like...
We got the most honest conversation from 1983 teenagers.
Yeah, like they are breaking it down the way nerds today have 30 years of reflection on these films.
Exactly.
The way they break it down. It was a little... Come on. And then Jean has that little, you know, everybody knows the third one's always the shittiest or the worst one.
They might have all stopped and all looked at the screen.
Yeah, and just mugged.
it's like Fuller House, right?
Yeah. it was a little, okay, we get it, you're being cute. And then, they pull up at the house.
But what, was Nightcrawler in disguise or anything?
I don't remember. I thought he went with them, but how did he walk around? Was he wearing... Well, he must have been wearing that Apocalypse hood, because apparently nobody can see a blue guy with a hood on. So there you go. Problem solved.
I don't remember...
You were happy with the Apocalypse explanation. You can't split hairs now.
But he wasn't wearing that. Okay, whatever. The thing is, they were coming back right when the explosion happened at the school.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, when we see, you know, Quicksilver get up to the... Right before he gets to the mansion, like, they're coming back in the car. And... They pause, because everything pauses whenever he does anything, and that's they don't come back until after he...
So this has all gone down like a space of like 2 seconds from every point of view, and I guess all the shock of it, Mystique has lost her concentration for a second. She's blue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when all the students are like, oh, they start getting on their knees and, you know, practically start worshiping her because they think she's so cool. The Beast is like, they look up to you and you need to step up and accept the mantle of leadership that you do. You know, she's like Aragorn. You're a leader. You need to. That's basically what they're treating her like.
Return of the Mutant.
Yeah. Like, she's the one king who can lead mutants, but if only she'll accept the mantle of leadership and shit like that. And yeah. It's kind of like, yeah. And then some military helicopter shows up. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
No. Before this happens, when we completely forgot this thing. When Apocalypse is hijacking Xavier's mind to send that message to the world, he's also having every military human send their nuclear weapons up into space. And he basically... Apocalypse is on a quest for peace. Do you understand that reference? Yeah. Superman 4? It's awesome. He basically rids every human of their most powerful weapons. He sends all the nuclear weapons off into outer space, I guess.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, these military people show up. And then Stifler is in charge of all of them, and he lands. I know, it's not that guy looks like Stifler. Turns out it's Colonel Stryker.
Yeah.
Who Brian Cox played in Part 2, and he was in...
He's at the end of
the last movie. Yeah,
Days of Future
Past, yeah. And he says... He has, like, this boom song, this wave that knocks out everybody. He takes Mystique.
Mm-hmm.
He takes... Kurt? No. He takes Mystique. Who does he take? He takes like four. He takes Moira.
Yeah.
He takes Beast.
Yeah.
He takes Mystique.
That's it.
And he takes Quicksilver.
Do they? Oh, yeah, that's right.
He takes those four with him.
And Nightcrawler, Jean, and Scott.
Yes, they're hiding.
They're hiding behind, and then they teleport.
Yeah, they sneak onto the helicopter. Yeah. So those seven mutants are being taken away, and they're like, "What do you want with us?" Well, they're in a jail cell, and he says a psychic emanation came from that school that caused everybody. So apparently, that's how you justify storming a school and. Because they detected the second.
Yeah, because Moira is like, I'm a CIA agent. Why are you?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You're the scene of the crime, ma'am.
Yeah. So apparently the military, or whoever these people are, have been monitoring. They know Xavier's a telepath. They know where they live. And so apparently they do know a little bit about us.
Yeah. Or us.
I said they're monitoring Xavier. All of a sudden it's us. About the X-Men. Oh, I'm sorry. They're not the X-Men. They're just a school.
Right.
Beast keeps saying, like, I want Charles to... We need the X-Men. I wanted to make them soldiers and all that, but Charles is not having it. He just wants to run a school and teach kids, even human kids. Yeah.
Yeah, there's also another scene where Beast is walking Mystique under the hangar, and we see the Blackbird, and she's like, you're making a warplane, or whatever she says. How are you going to get out of here? Oh, I'm making an opening in the basketball court.
Yeah. I knew I forgot something.
Yeah, right.
Oh. Yeah, so the kids, Jean, Scott, and Kurt, Nightcrawler, they're sneaking around. Jean's using her telepathy to, like, mentally shield them so nobody can detect them. And then they get spotted on the security cameras.
Right.
So they go and hide in this room.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear, like, this breathing. Like, there's, like, an animal in
there. There's some kind of animal in
there. Yeah, it's like, yeah. It's like a direwolf in there or something. You just hear, like, rrr. She's hiding in the thing. And it's got like a little, it's got like a big old bolt,
mm-hmm.
the cage, and she's hiding behind it where all the soldiers bust in with their machine guns looking for her, and then she uses her telekinesis to get rid of the bolt, the door opens, we see a foot come out, camera's really low, kind of like what we just saw with Quicksilver, hey, let's just pan from the bottom up, that's a nice dramatic reveal, we haven't used it in 10 minutes.
He also dealt with Mystique, or Jennifer Lawrence, when she first debuted, her first scene in this movie.
In this movie?
Yeah, because she was, I remember they did that, yeah. In the nightclub scene.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, so that was three times.
Oh, wow. The third time always sucks. Well, so we see these bare feet.
Mm-hmm.
Camera pans up, and you're starting to get excited. Sadly, I kind of knew about this. Thank you, Mark Bernardin, for ruining it. The camera... Did you know what this was?
I knew what it was because... that last fucking trailer where they showed him...
Mm.
So I knew he was going to be... I knew he was going to be in the movie, and I knew this place looked familiar.
And it's Stryker.
It is Stryker. Yeah. So I'm already Stryker. I've already put it together. So it's just like, okay, it's Wolverine.
I probably would have too had it not just been fucking spoiled for me.
Yeah.
The day it opened on a podcast. At least we stay spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But he's wearing shorts. He's shirtless. He's got wires. It's Weapon X.
Yeah.
It's the Weapon X we've seen. And it's going up his waist, and I see the wires. I'm like, oh my God, it's Weapon X. And I'm super excited. And then I see that it's Hugh Jackman. And the helmet that he usually wears, it's you know, it covers his eyes. It's a giant thing. It's, instead, it's just like a little bitty headgear. So you can, because we can't block Hugh Jackman's face.
Right.
We got to show Hugh Jackman. So it's, it wasn't the Weapon X I wanted to see. I think it would have been better if they didn't get Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
If they just got like some younger buff dude and then just give him like the heavy duty Weapon X helmet and the gear with a red visor across. You can't even tell who it is.
That really kind of bummed me out, honestly, because I was
distracting.
I was getting so, you know, like, it was panning up, and I saw the waist, the gear, uh-huh, the belt gear, and I was like, oh, shit, we're getting Weapon X. And then, like you said, it was so off. Like, it was such a small thing of just covering up the face.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do that, and it was like, it really
threw me off. It's like that ball guy in Cloud City who just has that little electronic thing going around the back of his head, and whatever. It was just...
Lobot.
Yeah, there you go. That guy sucks. But yeah, it was, and it's Hugh Jackman. He's so big, and Wolverine is so big, it just becomes about him.
And it did.
Yeah, and it's distracting. It took me out of the moment, because then I'm just like, oh, how's Hugh Jackman look? I wonder what he, I don't know. I would prefer Weapon
X. Why does he look older now?
and it looks like he skipped leg day, like, too. I mean, he still looks pretty big and buff, and he proceeds, it almost took me out of the moment. I couldn't really appreciate the fact that he was killing everybody, like, remember in X-Men 2 when I said he stabs those guys? Like, oh my God, that was awesome! Because we weren't tired of Hugh Jackman by now. This is like, what, the eighth time he's played Wolverine or something?
Something like that, yeah.
I was a little tired of him. Well, this is the ninth movie, and he's been in every one. He's been in every one.
So there's 6, 7, 8? Yeah. Eight movies.
Yeah. So I've seen him be Wolverine enough already, and it's just like, oh God, again? Really? Even in the trailer, when they showed the claws, I was like, dang it, I was really hoping for just a real X-Men story for once. Instead, it's the Wolverine show.
At least it was just contained to this one scene.
I guess.
But, that, you know, at the end of that, you know, he kills off pretty much the whole...
He murders the whole facility.
Yeah. Which, I don't have a problem with that. That's fine. Whatever.
That's fine.
But as they're all about to leave... he turns around and sees Jean and Scott, mm-hmm, you know, and she's able to walk up. He's not going to kill her, which, mm-hmm, I don't know why. He's a monster right now at this point. He's an animal. Mm-hmm. But she just takes off the helmet and touches his head, and I give him back some of the memories that I could find.
Yeah, he kind of calms down when she took, like, he's all like, he's all feral, and she touches him, and he kind of calms down, and he starts pulling the wires out, and he's still not all there, but he kind of... And then he runs away in the snow, and it's almost silly.
I heard people laughing. I heard
people laughing at how he's running away in his little short shorts and shit. It's funny. He runs like a Welshman. Yeah, and then that's it. And then they proceed to go free the other three kids, and then make a beeline to wherever.
A little bit of humor in that scene when Nightcrawler's trying to talk to them, and the comm isn't working, mm-hmm, and...
He's like, get away from the door, because Cyclops is about to blow it open.
Yeah.
He goes on the count of three, he goes, 1, 2, but he can't, because he only has two fingers, he can't go 3. Well, he has 3 fingers.
I think this is his time. It was a little bit of,
he's got like Ninja Turtle hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those seven, they find like a helicopter, like, oh, look, flight suits that are all black leather and shit, and... I guess.
That's convenient.
Yeah, that was convenient, too.
But there was just that many of them.
So, like, oh, that's why they wear black leather suits. Yeah. Or what I was saying earlier, that's why Jean and Wolverine have this connection. And, oh, that's why, you know, trying to... Anyways.
And that was a fancy jet that organization... Behind. Yeah. I mean, that was, what, we're talking 1983? And this is some souped-up helicopter jet thing. Or not a helicopter, it was a jet, but it was like a...
It was kind of both of them. It was some weird hybrid that shouldn't have been invented for another 30 years.
But anyway, that's when they're going to go fight Apocalypse.
Yeah, and he went back to Egypt, right? And he basically builds a pyramid out of nothing.
At this point, he has Xavier with him,
mm-hmm,
and he's kind of basically doing the villainous plot. He's telling him everything.
He's using Xavier to broadcast, like, I'm Apocalypse, I'm here. And he's like, all of you strong people... When you were the last ones remaining, we'll build new Earth. And Xavier is just, like, taking dictation. Only at the last minute, he goes, all of you strong people, protect the weak ones. Like, he doesn't give in
and
do that. And all the meanwhile, he's like secretly like sending a secret message mentally to Gene. He's like, Gene, come find us, yada yada.
Yeah.
And that's how they know to go to Egypt and stop. Basically, he's going to have Eric control the magnetic force of to destroy the world. Like, shit just starts flying in the sky and buildings are crashing and all this kind of shit. I don't really get what he's supposed to be doing.
He was just
causing destruction.
Because he doesn't do anything. He just stands there and he...
But I mean, what was he doing to the planet? Was he just lifting shit up?
I have no idea.
Or was he like disintegrating? I didn't get what he was actually doing.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Shit was just flying around, and buildings were just crashing, and bridges were just breaking. And I mean, but I don't know what it was he was doing, and what was his plan? Was he just keep smashing and just smash the planet?
Because it was going on for a while, but nothing's really happening. There's a lot of destruction going on, but nothing was progressing with that. This is like a repeat. He's just repeating this.
Yeah. So he's telling them all like what his big scheme is, and Xavier's like, "And what is my? Do I have a role in all this?" And he's like, "You have the most. You have the most important role," or whatever he tells him.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, "In all my every time I get a body, the one power I've never had is your psychic brain." So now he's going to transport himself into Xavier's new body,
right?
And be crippled? I don't know. No, because he has Oscar Isaac's. Wolverine gene, so he'll be healed or something.
Right.
I don't know. Whatever. All the meanwhile, Magneto's doing his thing. He's in there doing the body transfer. The X-Men show up, and basically the remaining three, Storm, Psylocke, and Angel, and we get a big action set, action sequence. It's mutants versus mutants, like a mutant civil war, almost.
And you've seen this on the trailers. I mean, they show a lot of these scenes.
Mm-hmm. You know, Psylocke cuts the car in half, and Angel's shooting his... Feathers,
yeah.
Metal feathers, or that whatever
the
that
blades.
He does.
The blades.
Yeah.
Actually, you mentioned something earlier. It's like, that's the one thing you wanted to see was a psychic blade for Psylocke. That's not what I wanted to see. Was I wanted to see her take someone out with the blade.
Oh.
And she didn't see that.
Well, because apparently, I don't know if she was even a telepath in this. And that's what she does when she stabs you. She doesn't, like, physically harm you. It, like, incapacitates you mentally. Like, if I was to stab you with the psychic blade, you just pass out. But this thing cuts through fucking... cut through a can for you like a Ginsu knife, you know, and still it'll cut through a car and then still slice a tomato paper thin. So she could do that now, and she's fighting Beast, and all of a sudden she can do psychic whips. Well, you can argue that the Apocalypse gave her that power.
You could argue,
Like maybe she couldn't do that before, but now Apocalypse kicked her up to 11.
They made it a point to say that being a horseman enhances your powers.
Mm-hmm. But what did Storm do she couldn't do before? She made some winds and she shot some lightning, but other than that...
She couldn't control it before or something like that.
Because she was a kid. She was a street rat.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like she did anything that Storm, as we know her, couldn't do. Because she didn't do a lot.
Yeah.
She shot some lightning here and there. Eventually, Kurt gets into the chamber. In the middle of the process, he, like, disconnects. He, like, pulls the plug while you're in progress, and he pulls Xavier out. One by one, he's pulling them all into their ship to make a getaway. All the while...
I was going to say, before he pulls out Xavier, the transference is starting to happen, and this when he starts...
His hair all falls out. So that's why Xavier's always bald, you know? Yeah, another one of them moments.
It's a good thing Moira, woke up Apocalypse, because otherwise we wouldn't have half the stuff that connected everything.
Oh, and all the while, Magneto's in his little... He's surrounded in a ball of like magnetism, and there's just like debris, and you can't penetrate. Was that supposed to be like his little electricity ball from the cartoons and comics? Because he's standing there with a circle of energy around him, you know.
Yeah, I'll accept that.
Yeah, but Mystique and Quicksilver, she's like trying to talk him down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know you lost your family, but you still have Charles. You still have me. She looks at Quicksilver. She's like, you have more family than you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell he's considering it. And he looks at the kids like, and you, like. What do you got? give me your best pitch.
Convince me.
Yeah. And he doesn't tell him I'm your son?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You would think you probably should do that at that point.
That might have helped. Yeah. He just says, like, I'm here for my family, too.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. That's when Kurt, she's like, hey, we're all getting ready to leave. They're like, fuck this. It's not working. Let's get out of here. And they're about to get away in their plane when Angel, like, he picks up Psylocke, tosses her onto the plane.
And she starts stabbing like a T2 in the elevator scene. And
yeah. She cuts it open, and then basically Mystique, because she's the leader, tells everybody, grab a hold of Kurt's tail and just teleport all of them at once. Meanwhile, she just pushes the throttle down, and it crashes and it takes Angel. She kills Angel. So I guess it was never actually one Worthington, because can't kill him.
That was my last point that I was going to say.
Yeah. She kills Angel. Psylocke manages to get away. She kind of does like Wolverine does in X-Men 3, where she like tears down a building in half to slow her descent. That's cool. If you buy their psychic blade, can do that.
Like, I was like, what? Before the end of that scene happened and everything, I was like, okay, someone's going to die. And then I was thinking, it's not going to be Psylocke. She's like, she's the hot one. You're not going to get rid of that. That's your moneymaker right there. So
yeah. I hope she comes back.
Yeah.
I just hope that, no, I want her to, help. They do more with her.
Mm-hmm.
And make her a telepath. Although if they do make her a telepath, it'd be weird that like, wait, she could do that? Why didn't she never mention it last movie?
Why didn't she talk to Xavier while she was like 2 feet away from him?
Yeah, they could. Yeah. You can't just all of a sudden in a movie give her power that we never saw her do before. Keep Pride in Days of Future Past. So
Apocalypse.
Yeah. All of a sudden she can send people back in time. Yeah, you couldn't do that in 3 movies.
That's a discussion for another episode that we've already done.
Oy. So now they land back on the ground. Xavier is in this little house. They're hiding him. Meanwhile, Apocalypse is like running through the streets. Like, I can hear you, Xavier. I'm gonna find you. He's like stalking through the streets, and everybody's starting to fight him. You know,
is that the scene where we get it pauses again? So guess what happens when everything pauses?
Yep.
Jeez.
I mean, this might get a little jumbled because this is the big climax. You know, shit happens. Yeah. But at one point in the scene,
yeah, Quicksilver runs up to him.
Everything stops.
And I think whatever credibility you're trying to build up to Apocalypse, I think this kind of knocked it down a lot.
Totally. Quicksilver, yeah. Like, walks up to him, and, you know, he's, like, walking around him at a normal pace while Apocalypse is essentially frozen.
Right.
And it's, yeah, rather than show us how fast he moves, they're doing it. It's a relative term. It shows us how slow everybody is compared to him, which is an interesting, again, it's a visual medium, and if he's moving so fast, our brain can't comprehend it.
Right.
Slow everything else down around him. It's an interesting take to do it. I thought, I was like, that's a clever way. We've seen speedsters before in cartoons and all sorts of stuff. And you never thought of doing it that way, having everything just move really slowly.
Smallville.
But Smallville do that shit. You know what? Yeah, fuck this movie, man. Smallville was doing that shit for a decade. That's right. He did do that. Everything just got really slow. And he's like running, catching bullets. And, oh my God, he even did the bullet thing. Shit. They've used it in the theme song every week. Somebody save! He's catching bullets. Fuck yeah. Okay.
In this particular scene, like, there's
one. I forgot Smallville did it. Oh, God.
Like, he, like, punched Apocalypse and he, like,
Apocalypse goes flying!
Well, like, he turns and, like, his eyes almost went cross-eyed. I was like, really? Like, he looks silly.
Like, he punches Apocalypse. Yeah. Apocalypse goes flying, like, 10 feet. He runs to where he's about to land, punches him again. It's like, you know, when you're a little kid, you can't let the balloon touch the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You just keep hitting it and hitting it so the balloon never touches. He's doing that. He's playing Apocalypse is a balloon to this little kid. And after, like, this goes on for too long. Mm-hmm. And we're watching Apocalypse just flail his arms, like, all willy-nilly, like a Stretch Armstrong. And it deflates how scary this character is to see him just fly around. Mm-hmm. All you're missing, I'm surprised Bryan Singer didn't throw in the pinball machine, the ding, 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 every time he's hitting him. Eventually, at some point, he finally gets, you know, his wherewithal together, and he, like...
He's watching his movements.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he finally, like, turns the dirt, in, like, sand around his
elbow. Yeah, like quicksand, and it just sucks up Quicksilver's foot.
And then he, like, breaks his other leg.
Yeah, and he breaks... yeah.
Run now, bitch! And then that's when the other X-Men came in and
They're starting to fight. Then Xavier gets a revelation, and he's like, he's right. We're still connected. Like Apocalypse is his mind because there was still a connection when he severed it, whatever. He goes, but it works both ways. Like, I can battle him, and then he kind of enters his mind, and then they're sort of fighting. It's like Matrix. Like, you know, we're Morpheus is fighting Neo. You know, I'm expecting.
Yeah, and this is what we saw.
Mystique to come around the corner and be like, Apocalypse is fighting Xavier, and everybody drops what they're doing, and they all drop their cream corn to go watch it and shit.
But this is some of the stuff we saw in the trailers too.
Yeah, like, because it's Xavier's mind, he builds the X-Mansion around him, and then they literally fight, like fisticuffs fight in the X-Mansion. Xavier's winning for a second until Apocalypse pulls a giant man.
Yeah.
And it was cooler last month when Paul Rudd did it. But he starts like, as cool as it was to see Apocalypse get big, and and comics has been doing that for years.
That is an actual power.
He does do that. I was like, you just saw it last month. Fuck, I saw that like a couple weeks ago on Legends of Tomorrow. Like, this is everybody's getting big this summer. But he starts beating up Xavier. He's smashing his head to the ground like, you're nothing. This guy loves to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts walking to where Xavier is, and he like knocks the wall away. He disintegrates it, mm-hmm. and he starts walking towards it. And all of a sudden, like a giant eye beam comes at a corner, and then another one, ka-choon, making an X. And Magneto, for some reason, is now good again.
No, you know what? I wanted to point that out. That for whatever reason, like Storm and Psylocke and Magneto, they're, I guess they get their free will or something. They change their minds or whatever. They, all at the same time, they just kind of like, what am I doing? What, you know, and they start.
Well, in fairness.
Well, maybe not Psylocke, but Storm.
To be fair, I kind of wanted to hit this in a similar fashion, but I got to disagree in some points. Storm gets her. Okay, were they ever. Apparently, and I was under the impression. Because these are all good guys who are... Usually, he brainwashes people to get them to serve him. Because mm-hmm. he almost always... usually picks heroes and shit.
Right.
So he picks heroes to fight for him. And he brainwashes them and shit. And that's why they're evil. That's why they serve him. Apparently, they were all serving him just because.
Yeah.
So, yes. Apparently, Magneto gains his things back. And it was like, just because? Because he just... You know what? Maybe I shouldn't kill the world. He just decided... he has a lot of flashbacks of Xavier telling him...
There
know,
was like, a lot of flashbacks.
Yeah. First and he's like, yeah. Maybe I shouldn't do this. And... Yeah. No, but Storm decides to be good again when, oh, he's got Quicksilver. And he's, like, stuck, and he holds his hair back, and Psylocke comes walking up, and he's like, finish him.
Yeah.
And she holds up her sword and then cuts Apocalypse's throat. And you're like, what? Did she go good? And I thought that she just decided to go good randomly. And then he grabs her, and turns out it was Mystique. So Storm sees her hero. That's what turns her around. Because remember, she's like, I want to be Mystique. Mystique is my biggest hero ever. And then when she realizes she's fighting
yes.
against her hero, that's when she goes good. Because she wants to be on Mystique's side. So that's what turns her around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's no explanation for Eric. I guess he was, there's still good inside you. I can feel it. I guess that's his explanation. Mm-hmm. Psylocke never goes good. She just stays bad the whole time.
Yeah.
And Angel's dead. So.
The imposter.
Yeah. So Magneto just starts hurling every bit of metal around. And Apocalypse just kind of creates like a ball of fire. Mm-hmm. And he's just like incinerating all the metals that hit him. Cyclops takes his eye. He starts blasting him. Apocalypse is still blocking it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's like that scene we see in comics where people are just shooting their lasers and just trying to batter it down. And, you know, we've seen this a million times in a million movies. Even as far as back to Christopher Reeve movies, you know, General Zod shooting white lasers and Clark is just blocking it. This is a staple of somebody just blocking your energy beams.
Yeah.
And what, I'm trying to remember what happens then. Oh.
Well, Jean and...
The whole while, he's still mentally fighting Charles.
Yeah, and Jean comes in and helps him inside his... goes in and helps him out.
Yeah, he's like, you'll never defeat me because you're alone. And I'm not. He's like, Jean, like let go and do your thing. And then she...
I want to talk about this for a second.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
This is the... This is the first introduction of young Jean Grey back into the movies. And then maybe her third scene earlier on in the movie, she's having nightmares. Oh, Professor, it's happening again. This is the worst I've seen it. Mm-hmm. So this is that thing that's going on. He goes in there and she's like moaning and screaming or whatever. And the pictures on the walls are starting to melt.
The paint's peeling and shit. Yeah.
Did you know what they're going with right there?
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, really? They're going Phoenix already? Yeah. Like, come on. Like, just let it go.
I didn't know they were going to go full Phoenix yet.
Yes. I don't know. I think it's too soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's be reintroduced to her first as a heroic character.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly start.
Because now next movie, they're going to have to kill her. Right?
Just yeah.
Phoenix. Or he's going to realize he has to put those psychic blocks in. And maybe we'll get another movie or two before... they break down again.
I kind of wish they addressed that, the second block. Mm-hmm. Like, he saw her doing all that, he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, we saw the full, when he said let go.
Yeah, she's because they're on, like, a second deck of this building. Like yeah. I said, there's no wall. And she starts walking, and then she just keeps just walking on air. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's when she, like, God, creates the Phoenix fire.
You see the bird, yeah.
Incinerating Apocalypse. So mentally, she starts crushing him, and he's like starts stabbing him with shards of metal, and he's kind of stuck to the ground.
It was actually a kind of cool visual.
Yeah, like, he's like pinned to the ground. Yeah. Cyclops is shooting him. He's metal's hitting him, the phoenix is burning him, and then he starts to, like, teleport, and, like, he's getting away, and all of a sudden lightning starts coming down, mm-hmm. which, as we've already learned twice in this movie, electricity is like an inhibitor for teleporting. The whole reason Kurt was in the cage with Angel was because it was electrified. He couldn't teleport out. And then when he's in the helicopter, he's like, I can't get out. This is an electricity field. I thought that's what they were doing.
Okay, I missed that. Mm. And when I was watching it with our friend Abel, Houston Nurse Radio, and he leaned over to me when this happened. He's like, why didn't he just teleport out of the cage? It's like, oh, I guess I missed that.
Who, Apocalypse? Or?
No, Nightcrawler. At the beginning in the...
Oh, she says that. And then Cyclops even tells Jean, like, Jean, get in the pilot's head. She's like, I can't. There's something shielding us. Maybe it blocks telepathy too. I don't know. Mm. But he says he couldn't do it because of electricity.
Okay.
And it's also why he couldn't get out of the cage. And that's why Mystique had to go turn off the generators and shit.
Well, I knew there was...
So I'm assuming that's why Apocalypse couldn't teleport away. It was because Storm was starting to light him up.
It's not made clear to me.
So I think it's Jean who delivers the coup de grace. And so you see, like, his flesh melting away until it's his skull. And, you know, then they defeat Apocalypse and save the world. Bam. Bam. Evil's punished. And then everybody's happy. Oh, and then the whole time Moira's leaning over Charles, and she's like, Xavier, can you hear me? And blah, blah, blah. Like, where are you? Do you know where you are? And he's like, I'm on the beach in Cuba.
What beach? What are you talking
Cuba.
About?
Cuba. And you're there with me, and he touches her, and you see the flood of memories. She's crying. He's like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have taken that from you. And that's there's your favorite scene in the movie.
She's so mad, but he's so charming.
And rich. She's rich, powerful. If you were to help him out, your reward would be more wealth than you can imagine. She's like the Han Solo of this movie, just after the money. No. So then there's a scene of Xavier and Jean. The house is just like starting to just build itself together, the mansion.
Oh, because Magneto and Magneto Jean.
Yeah. Oh, well, I thought it was the bounty hunters from Critters when the house just assembles itself at the end of that movie. I don't know if you saw it. I thought they had one of them critter devices from Critters, but no. Yeah, they're like building the house. He's doing the metal. She's hammering the wood and shit like that. So they're building the house. They're turning it into a school again. The students are coming back. And we're starting to get, okay, that's about the end of the movie. I'm trying to think what else happens.
Very end of it, we see they're back under where the Cerebro and all that stuff is underneath the school.
Oh, yeah. They built all that shit.
Yeah.
They built a danger room.
Yeah.
That's right. We get some new costumes.
Yeah. Which we see it's the reveal of the new X-Men, I guess, mm-hmm. if you want to present it like that. But I got excited for it. It was pretty cool to see a team of X-Men in actual costumes.
Like Scott had that three belts going across
his chest. He had the Jim Lee belt, man. Yeah. Come on.
And Mystique has kind of like the white chest piece similar to... color scheme is similar to what we know
Mystique
from the comic.
Yeah, the white with the blue. She's
blue again. Yeah. I mean, her skin's blue.
Right. And that was a look that she had in the comics other than the whole dress thing mm-hmm. that she had originally. But, and then we saw Nightcrawler. He had black with the red stripes on the side.
I didn't notice that. There was a lot going on. And they didn't really, like, milk that scene. It was kind of like blinking, you'll miss him almost.
It's like Easter eggs.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even notice Scott's because I was just looking at his visor. He's got the visor now. The whole movie, he's just been lifting up his sunglasses.
Right. His little Ray-Bans with the little sides.
Did they say Ray-Ban on them?
No. But
okay.
No. And then Jean Grey had the blue with the yellow suit.
Oh, I wish she was wearing that big orange triangle down to her hoo-ha, like in X-Men Evolution.
It's green.
That's what I say.
Orange.
Oh, I meant green.
Yeah.
I just meant it leads to something orange because it's Jean.
Right.
You know, I wonder if the carpet matches the pubes. So, the end. And then the whole time we see Xavier's bald now. He apparently doesn't grow back. Now he's got that disease where his head is shaved, but he doesn't have to shave it because he can't grow hair now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Xavier and Magneto's there. He's like, have fun.
You mean he's bald and crippled? Ah, the poor guy.
But he's rich. I just keep coming back to that. And Magneto's basically like, good luck with that. Do your thing. I'm out. And the movie kind of ends. Oh, and then the doors open up and some Sentinels, like the old Sentinels from Days of Future Past walk out with the big things in the chest. Like,
yeah.
So I was afraid they were going to do straight up holographic Danger Room in 1983, and that would have been like, come on.
It ended good for me. The final scene that you see them in a Danger Room, essentially, is what it is, Danger Room. Sentinels coming out, and they're going to you know, they got a team now, so it's...
Yeah, they got X-Men.
Yeah.
Oh, and Beast is there, too. No, Beast and Mystique are, like, the teachers, right?
Right, right, right.
The blue ones.
Someone calls him Professor.
But he goes, I'm not a professor.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, shouldn't he be? Shouldn't he have more degrees than Charles?
Right?
Yeah. Which, I still gotta admit, Nick Holt, he doesn't portray Beast as sounding as intellectual and intelligent and all that. He's, you know, he's like, I invented this. But at least Kelsey Grammer sounds intellectual. Even the 90s cartoon, he was always quoting poetry.
Yeah.
He was breaking out those 50-cent words all the time. He sounds smart. Even on the page in the comics, he's always using those big words, and they didn't really portray Nick Holt like that. I don't know why. They don't write him to sound smart.
Like, if you didn't tell us that he invented some of this stuff, you wouldn't know it.
I wouldn't think he was a genius.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
That's pretty much it for that. Oh, we did get a post-credit scene.
What was it? Oh, yeah, the Weapon X facility.
Yeah, we go back to the Weapon X facility.
Yeah, some military guys are marching in. They're sweeping up dead bodies. They're literally vacuuming bullet cases.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I mean, recycle those things. And then he goes to like a refrigerator, pulls out some Weapon X test tubes of blood, I guess, and then they put it in the suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
They close it, and we see on the suitcase it says Essex Corp.
Yeah.
Which, and then you hear a spattering of, oh. It's like all the nerds in the theater want everybody to know I got that reference.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of very audibly like, oh, because you want the guy next to you to be like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're a pretentious lot.
I think I did that. It was kind of similar. What you said, I think we were walking out of the theater, you said, oh, it was kind of like AVP.
Yeah, where it turns out they open the suitcase and there, here's your laser gun, Miss Yutani. Like, oh, now we know who the corporate bad guy
wink,
is.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. again, anybody who's read the comics knows Nathaniel Essex is Mr. Sinister,
yeah.
This geneticist guy who's all about breeding and splicing mutant genes and working, you know, he's obsessed with Scott and Jean mostly and stuff, so
yeah.
And he has a lot of connections to Apocalypse. I don't know if we'll see, I don't know if Apocalypse is finally dead. I think he is.
They killed the shit out of him.
Yeah. What do you know? It disintegrated. So what'd you think of Apocalypse? I asked you what you thought of just the look, but overall, the performance, the everything, what'd you think of Oscar Isaac, all that stuff?
Could have been better. I had high bar set expectations just on the voice alone, because I grew up on the cartoon. Whoever played him on the cartoon, that voice.
Mm-hmm. I am as far beyond the mutants as they are beyond you. Yeah.
Amazing.
I like that dude.
And I kind of like, I just was expecting that.
Yeah, Apocalypse is kind of a thankless role. You can't even... The actor is unrecognizable.
Mm-hmm.
Both... He's got a voice modulator and the makeup.
And that voice modulator, it seems like it went in and out. Like, sometimes he had an echo to him, and sometimes he didn't.
Yeah, so you're unrecognizable. You don't even get to act. The whole portrayal is, I am Apocalypse, and I am very monotone, and this is how I talk. It was a very boring role. It was a boring villain. I mean, he's doing crazy shit, but as an actor, I think I would hate to play that role as an actor.
And it seems like, maybe this is my imagination, but there was a couple of times that we got close-ups of his face where it looked like either he's like sweating or like makeup was not all the way there. Sometimes it seems like he's a little off on the makeup.
Yeah, and the thing is also, Oscar Isaac is such a charismatic actor. Why would you want to tell him to dial it down to one and cover him in makeup and take away his voice? You're taking away all the tools that you hire this actor for.
You don't turn down Pope.
Yeah, so I was like, I mean, he did cool, you know, there was cool special effects behind what he was doing, but for Oscar Isaac, yeah, I was disappointed that I didn't get to see more of him and what he probably could have done with this role if it was a juicy, you know, role.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get to have the yelling at the sky, is this what I am to you? He didn't get to do any of that stuff. Although I already said how much I love that scene. Okay. No, I'm sorry. I'm kind of a new topic. And what, do you got anything else to say about Apocalypse?
No, not really.
Speaking of Magneto, let me ask you a question. How many millions of people do you think he killed when he was destroying the world?
I think I lost track around 15.
He wasn't brainwashed. He really thought it was a good idea. yeah. to destroy the world. Mm. Do you really want a guy like that running around who might just on a dime? You know what? I think I was right the first time. I think I will destroy the world. And even if he is good now, he killed millions of people probably. He is the biggest mass murderer since
Superman.
I was going to say since Hitler. Ironically enough. Ooh, yeah. Ooh. And he gets to just walk away wearing a sexy turtleneck. Nobody cares that you just, on your own, if he was brainwashed, that would have been one thing. But on your own volition, you just were about to kill the world and probably kill millions of people, if not more. Because there was buildings just falling over. And bridges were collapsing. And cars were flying. And this is happening over the entire planet.
Right.
And he was doing that shit for like an hour. He must have killed millions of people. And they just let him get away? Oh, and then they let Storm join? She's an X-Men now.
Yeah.
She was cool with killing the world just because. Because, you know, I'm a street rat and it sucks, so I'm going to kill the world.
Well, she didn't... Well, she's a little more redeemable in this case because she didn't really do anything.
I mean, she was... She stood by... No, you're guilty by association. You said it. She was there at Apocalypse's side. She was the first one who was there by his side.
You can say ignorance on her part.
Ah. It's just too easy to just have her just flip an allegiance and everybody cool with it just like that.
Well, at least she's chosen a side.
If it was like in X-Men 2 where Brian Cox puts that little acid in a bag and you're brainwashed, okay. It wasn't his fault. He was brainwashed. Right. Can't blame him.
Yeah.
But it seemed as if they made their own choices. But they don't have to live with them because they're good now.
What did you think? I think it was the last scene of the movie when Charles is talking to Magneto and they basically redo the same exact speech that they had in the first X-Men movie.
Oh. Doesn't that wake you up in the middle of the night?
Yeah. Like,
what do you do when you wake up to
that?
Do
they just do that from time to time? Just say the same?
Well, I mean, that scene hasn't happened yet in their timeline. So it's like, time's immutable. That speech is going to happen one way or another. It's a different timeline.
This is why I keep it around.
Yeah. You know, it does indeed. Like, what do you do when you wake up to that? I feel a great swell of pity for the poor soul who comes to this school looking for trouble.
All right. Who did the scene better? Them two or...
Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart. Even the way he knocks over the chess piece and what do you do when you wake up? The way he picks up the chess piece, oh, it's so good. Ah, oh, yes, your ever-ending quest for hope. Yeah. Oh, God, still get goosebumps at how they actually had actors acting in this movie. In a comic book movie in part two, yes.
Love it. I mean, people so get to act?
Mm-hmm. And again, McAvoy and Fassbender were fine, but I think they were phoning in a little bit more compared to... Because we came home and watched First Class, and they were killing it.
We didn't intend to, but we just flipped it on, and it was just happened to be on. But yeah, dude, there was so much... Oh, God, it was so much better.
They were destroying.
Yeah.
That one of my favorites... In the last three movies, I still think my favorite scene is when it's just them two, and he reaches into his mind, and he pulls up him lighting the manure or whatever like that, and Magneto starts crying. He's like, what did you do to me? And Xavier starts crying too, and he's like, I access your happiest memory. It's a very beautiful memory. I'm getting weepy right now just talking about it. He's like, it's a very beautiful memory, Eric. Thank you. And there's so much more to you than hate. It's good in you. I can feel it. Yeah. I didn't know I had that in me. And he starts moving the dish, and he still has tears in his eyes, but he's laughing. He's like, ha, ha, ha. Oh, beautiful scene.
And that, would you say the devilish smile?
That big Fassbender grin that he's got. yeah. And there was no good scenes like that between them too.
No, there wasn't. There was no chemistry.
Acting.
There's no chemistry.
Acting.
There's no chemistry between anybody in this movie.
Yeah, and like I said, J-Lo. Like I said, half of them are phoning it in. Like J-Lo certainly was.
Yeah, and then you're trying to introduce this new crowd, and we, like, on like Twitter and stuff, before this movie came out, when production was beginning, like, Bryan Singer himself, like, was posting out, tweeting a lot of different pictures and this and that. Like, one of the first things we saw was of Jean and Jubilee in a mall. Where's the mall scene in this movie?
Well, we did, on the internet, there was a picture of them in a music store.
Yeah.
And I think Scott is holding up a record of Dazzler.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a nice, it would have been a nice little Easter egg, yeah.
Apparently Easter egg is so well hidden you sign in the movie.
Yeah, but I don't know. It would have helped a little bit more because Scott's character was like the whole first half of the movie, he's tormented and grumpy and my life is like, I can't even see, I won't even have a normal life. Here's some glasses. Cool, man, let's break out of this. I could use a jailbreak. Let's go to the mall. All of a sudden his character just went a complete 180.
He's kind of a dick.
Yeah. He was just like, let's
Logan was right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're a dick. But his characters went from, I mean, I guess, hey, now I can see, but you can't just flip it on a dime like that. And maybe the mall scene, hey, I'm having fun.
Like, he wasn't grateful that he could see.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe he's realizing, I might have a life. I might have friends or something, and he's into it. But he just went, like, let's get out of this school, man. I need some fresh air. I need to...
And it wasn't even like that's how he was before his powers. Because before the powers happened, he just seemed like a normal kid. Like, he didn't seem like he was an asshole.
Well, we never really got to see him. His powers are the only defining characteristics. He's in class, just, I have a headache. Can I go to the nurse? I can't see. And then he's zapping bullies. Next thing you know, he's got a rag on his face. Yeah, we never really got to see what Scott was like. Just is.
Yeah.
But Scott's always, I mean, he's kind of a boring character. That's his thing, is that he's a boring character, Scott. He's like the Boy Scout of the group, mm-hmm. you know. Probably why they write such terrible shit that happens to him story-wise, because the character itself isn't super interesting. So let's have his future kids show up and things like that, and have him marry clone women, and his crazy shit happen to the character.
Right, yeah.
Because he's kind of boring as a character himself.
All right, so that's Apocalypse. That's the movie. So
that's X-Men Apocalypse.
We're done. Wash your hands of that. What are you looking forward to in a future movie? What do you want to see happen? Like, if they go the route
of... Future X-Men movie?
Yeah, like... If they tease it, like, if the tease is accurate, we're going to get Sinister as the next villain?
I mean, I've been hearing, you know, the new Wolverine movie will be rated R. And the new Wolverine movie will be Old Man Logan. Mm. I think I said this to you after the movie. When they show the Weapon X guys opening up the freezer and they're taking the blood, I thought it would have been cool if they hinted more at X-23.
Right.
Rather than more Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Mm. Like, God, already? We got Wolverine Origins already. I don't need more of his backstory, because I guess it's going to take place in the 80s, so it's going to be more origin story for him.
The only thing I heard about the next X-Men movie, it's going to take place in the 90s.
Okay.
Which makes sense. I mean,
Hugh Jackman's like, what, 75 now? He's pretty old. I mean, he's getting up there.
Yeah.
But...
I think it is time for a fresh take on Wolverine.
Mm-hmm. Do X-23. Okay, if you're not familiar, X-23 is a teenage girl clone of Wolverine.
Who's been established for a while. Incredible. I think she was introduced in X-Men Evolution, and then the comics adapted her.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure.
Kind of like Harley.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn started in the comics, started in the cartoon, and they brought her over to the comics.
Because the first comic she was in was in Runaways, but I think she was already established from Evolution. But that would be cool to see, because it'd be different, but it's still Wolverine. Matter of fact, in the comics now, that is Wolverine. She is the new Wolverine. So,
yeah, you're right. She was created for X-Men Evolution before she debuted in the actual comics in 2004. So that's cool. But yeah, She's an awesome character. She's got she has a mind killing somewhat. I mean, it's been a while since I've read books, but last I saw her, she was hanging out with X-Force a lot,
mm-hmm.
which is like the X-Men's black bag team.
Yeah.
Of mutants who don't mind getting their hands dirty. You know, they do the wet works. It's like Warpath and Wolverine and Archangel,
Psylocke,
Domino.
Yeah, Psylocke was in there. They brought in Deadpool too.
Yeah. What's the name of that Phantom X. Yeah. That's the last thing I remember from her. Mm-hmm. And I remember for a while she was hanging out with like the Avengers, the Young Avengers Academy, because she couldn't deal with X-Men. So they're like, go hang out with Avengers for a little while.
Yeah. When they kind of redid everything a year or two ago for Marvel, they got rid of, you know, in the comics they actually killed off Wolverine, and now she took the mantle of Wolverine. So now she mm-hmm. is the Wolverine.
But yeah, she's supposed to be a teenage character, so get like a young actress who's like 17, 18, and this way she can be part of this franchise for the next 10 years or something.
And keep it with the same age class as the rest of the cast members. Like whoever, like however old these other characters are, that way they can kind of go together, you know?
Yeah, but the thing is she's supposed to age really slowly. So yeah. If they're all young, because they're going to age out pretty fast.
Yeah.
If she's aging the exact same moment, we're going to sort of lose the fact that she's supposed to be still younger than them, I think. So I'm saying skew her just a little young to buy yourself some time.
Fair enough.
Get like a teenager actress who's like 17.
The other option, if you don't want to do X-23, is you can do Daken.
Oh, his son?
Yeah.
But I mean, everybody's like, you know, there's not even a female, you know, Wonder Woman's coming out, but you know, a female character, a female, maybe even give her her own movie. People are complaining there's no female superhero movies.
Yeah.
With a female lead, at least.
Right.
You know, you got big-ass Avengers, and then you had, like, Widow was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Then you add, like, five more male Avengers, and then you get, like, Wanda. You know, they're always out.
I always laugh about this kind of stuff, because before this was a movie thing, it was a comic book thing. Like, Marvel had no, like, female superhero titles. And then they went on a thing, and they created all these new titles that were... They were just female-driven. It was this, the heroes were females. Guess what happened? Nobody bought them. They all got canceled out. Because nobody... The sales are bad. The same thing's gonna happen with movies.
If it's like a hot... look at Lucy. Lucy made money. That was like a female superhero.
Did it make money?
It made some money. That was bad, though. They're making Ghost in the Shell again with fucking ScarJo. And that's like... I mean, it's not a superhero, but it's like a sci-fi feature, right. You know?
Yeah.
And she's gonna be the female lead. I mean, you know, they're giving females a chance. They're giving females? One female a chance. I was about to say,
you're making some bad points there. But
Okay, maybe don't make it an X-23. Maybe don't make her the lead, but put her in her prominently. Mm-hmm. Put her in there with some other teams and see how people respond to her, if they like her.
Do you think it would be okay to have the next movie without a Wolverine?
I've been wanting that for years.
I thought we were going to get this one until that last trailer hit. Yeah. I was like, oh, well, there he goes.
I mean, he's fine, but he doesn't need to be in every single X-Men movie.
Especially once you veered off and started making his own movies. Mm-hmm. I think once you had your movies, okay, you're done.
Yeah. The thing is, he was never the focus of the X-Men to begin with in the books.
Right.
In 2000,
he was a character. Yeah. He was just a team.
Mm-hmm. In 2000, they made him the focal point, and I was like, that makes sense, because he kind of comes from... He's the outsider, but he's already... You know, it made sense in the story of 2000's X-Men.
Right.
Because everybody else grew up at the school, and they learned and trained, but he learned and trained and grew up on his own, so it makes sense that he's our portal into this world, because he's the outsider. So I get why they made him the centerpiece of that movie, but... You know, should have left well alone after a while. We don't need to. It doesn't need to be about Wolverine every single time.
I'm not disagreeing with that. But anything else you want to add before you wrap this one up?
I don't know. What are you hoping to see in the next movie?
Do you want to? I don't know. Maybe like a new writing team, new directing.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one.
Continue with the cast if you want. But just as long as you got a good infrastructure of the team itself, you know, writing, directing, everything, then we might have something. But
yeah, I'm not a fan of Simon Kinberg's been writing these mostly. Bryan Singer has been directing them. So yeah, it's time for some new blood.
Matthew Vaughn did a fine job in First Class. I mean, see what he's doing. I don't know.
What has he been doing lately? Or we did Kingsman.
Here's another thing. With everything that's been going on with the Spider-Man and the Sony, Marvel, all that legal mumbo jumbo stuff, if Spider-Man's a big success with Homecoming, what if that opens up doors for negotiations between Fox and Marvel?
I think if that happens, they'll give them Fantastic Four first. See how that works out.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, so it's Sony who gave up Spider-Man, but Fox has yet to see how it's going to work to give up a character and see if they can just, you know, make the money off what Marvel does with it creatively. And they'll probably give him Fantastic Four, because they're still making money off X-Men.
Yeah, but how much more money could they be making?
But they're not just going to give it up without a fight. But whereas Fantastic Four is kind of dead in the water, you know, take this one.
Yeah.
And see what you can do with it first. And it's like, oh shit, they made a shit ton with a dead property. And I'm like, okay, we'll see what you can do with some of these X-Men. You know, try an X-23 or try an X-Force or something.
Yeah.
Give them that and then see how that does. And all right, fine, take them all. Take Xavier, take Cyclops, take them all. Take my wife, please.
But yeah, that's what I'd like to see. Maybe more. Maybe. Follow suit with Marvel at the very least if you're not going to negotiate with them. But that's the one thing that's making Marvel so good is their willingness to give back to the fans. You know, they like to stick to the where their story is rooted in comics. You know, they like to translate that very well into the movies, where Fox just goes all over the place trying to. They'll pick random mutants and random characters, and I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Okay, well. All right, so I think it's going to do it. Listeners, what did you think of X-Men Apocalypse? Did you like it? Did you hate it? What do you want to see in the next movie? Let us know. Follow us on social media at facebook.com/popculturerewind. Follow us on Twitter at pop culture RWND. And also, or shoot us an email, popculturerewind@gmail.com. And you can check out all our episodes at popculturerewind.com.
Yeah. X-Men Apocalypse, it's watchable.
Yeah.
I felt like we were really hitting on it as comic book readers and nerds and hitting it. And yeah, there has its problems, but it's a watchable movie.
Yeah.
And unless you're a super nerd, 90% of the things that were bugging us won't apply to you. You know, there's fun to be had here.
Yeah.
And it's a summer popcorn.
And there's
movie.
A few nods to comic book fans too. So it's not.
Yeah, I don't know. My goal was to sort of get that clear. I don't know if I did. I think I got wrapped up in I can feel your hate flowing through. Yeah. So yeah, but no, there's fun to be had here.
Oh yeah, I agree. It's kind of there's a lot of stuff going on in this movie, but
yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah. So we probably need to go back and watch it again.
Maybe.
But anyway, it's an enjoyable film. It's not great. It's not the worst one, but it's not the best one.
No, it's no Civil War. Oh, and that didn't help that I saw that
right,
a couple weeks ago for the second time.
That set the bar pretty high.
Yeah.
So, things gonna about do it for this week. So, until next time, always remember to pop your culture.
Later.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good,
though. It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.